From Austin, live music capital of the world, this is Texas Music Matters. Everyone's famous if only for 15 minutes, or so goes the saying attributed to Andy Warhol. In music, this notion is captured by the phrase, one-hit wonder. But somehow one-hit wonder doesn't do justice to the many artists who pushed popular music forward in important ways, even if they did fail to return to the top of the charts after some big hit record. The story of Sir Doug Somm is a perfect case in point. But you know, you could say the same for a whole host of Texas artists who might have had just one top 10 hit back when, but whose impact lasts to this day. Now here, The Flip Side, a special edition of Texas Music Matters. We're going to get underway in just a moment. Stay with us.
Texas Music Matters is made possible in part by Lewis Shanks of Texas, offering fine home furnishings since 1945. LewisShanksFurniture.com.
There are certain songs that stick to the brain like Velcro, though the names of the performers are the stuff of Trivial Pursuit questions. They're the artists who hit the charts in a big way, never to repeat the feat. They call them one-hit wonders. Chances are lots of these songs conjure up vivid memories, and yet there's something about these songs that makes people smirk and chuckle. Veteran music journalist Michael Hall may have it figured out. In the March 2007 issue of Texas Monthly Magazine, he writes, "One-hit wonders are held in the public's esteem somewhere above child stars, game show hosts, and losers from American Idol." That's how Hall begins his article, "The Songs Remain the Same," a profile of 8 one-hit wonders from the Lone Star State.
I was really hesitant when I was calling these people up because I thought, you know, I don't want to embarrass them. I have a lot of respect for these people, and I'm sure that they have this, that there's a part of them that's just mortified that they're thought of that way, as being one-hit wonders. And I'd even worked up this whole thing, and I sent a couple of them emails, and I've phoned some of them up, and I had this whole rap down. I was like, and I remember I called up Roy Head, and Mr. Head, this is my call with Texas Monthly, and we're doing a photo shoot on musical artists whose careers have been defined for the most part by one specific hit, and yet they've... And he just stopped me laughing. He going, that's okay, you could say it. Call me a one-hit wonder. And he's just laughing about it.
Yeah, my man.
Roy Head may have been the son of a poor white sharecropper from Three Rivers, Texas, but he had a voice that was perfect for R&B radio.
Hey!
Or as Roy puts it, they thought I was a black guy.
We did an all-black DJ convention, and I was with Don Robey at that time on Backbeat Records, which I was one of the only white artists on the label. And at that time, he had Bobby Bland, Little Junior Parker, Al T&T Braggs, Little Esther Phillips, all a whole bunch of people. And he decided he wasn't going to let me do the show, so... Little lady from KCOH radio said, "Look, Don, you need to let this boy on stage." And when I first came on stage, I guess it was kind of like Charlie Pride at Panther Hall. You know, But then when I started doing my stage work, my mic work, Joe Tex taught me all my mic work, by the way. And the next day, it was played all over the country. But still, 3/4 of the country did not know that I was a white boy.
I want to tell you a story every man ought to know.
If you want a little loving, you gotta start real slow. She's gonna love you tonight now, if you just treat her right now.
It was originally, if you want a little milk, you want a little cream, gotta squeeze her real gentle. She's got the best you've ever seen. And I can't really remember all the original lyrics, but it was definitely talking about a cow.
'Cause if you don't treat her right, she won't love you tonight.
Treat Her Right hit the airwaves in September 1965. Head started getting invitations to perform on national teenage dance shows like Shindig. His appearances were outrageous and electric, doing splits and backflips, kicking the mic stand so it'd swing away and boomerang back just in time for the next verse. Two minutes and 3 seconds of swamp pop perfection. But a funny thing happened on the way up the charts. With number one in sight, a four-piece sensation from the UK released their new single.
Yesterday, all my troubles seemed so far away.
Roy Head and his band, The Traits, would have to settle for number two. But time has treated Roy right. Through the years, his song's been covered by artists from Otis Redding to George Thorogood. Head's recorded country albums, appeared on countless nostalgia music tours, performed at Farm Aid, and last year at a South by Southwest showcase. He's still a good dancer, and he keeps up appearances, looking every bit a rock and roll wild man these days. With his big hair, sunglasses, and cigarette, he laughs as he remembers that moment 42 years ago, when he was driving with his band through East Texas and heard his song on the radio for the very first time.
We were going down the road. We heard Treat Her Right on the radio. All the doors flew open. We were out. I mean, it was awesome. I don't think I've ever, ever felt like that in my whole life. It was the biggest high out of all the drugs, Advil, ibuprofen, and stuff that I've ever taken in my life. It was the greatest high I've ever had in my life. I mean, you can't imagine that feeling. I don't know what you compare it with. I had a great trip and a wonderful ride. Wouldn't change anything for nothing.
Let me take a step back here. Some of these songs people don't know.
That's music journalist Michael Hall of Texas Monthly Magazine.
It's funny. I'll mention some of these songs, and people go, I don't know that. I don't know that song. I never heard that song. You know, there are songs that you miss somehow. Either it wasn't a big hit where you grew up or whatever. Everybody knows Tighten Up. Everybody. You know, it's two chords. It might be a third chord in the whole song, but it's got this really great guitar riff and horn riff. Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. And the break, da-da-da-da-da. But the thing that people remember most, I think, about the recorded version is his introduction. He wrote the song after Kennedy was assassinated, and he heard a DJ say that nothing good had come out of Texas and brought up Dallas.
I want to let the people know that wasn't true. You know, we do have even every state, every country have bad things that happen, so that wasn't a fact. I wanted the people to know that we were from Texas and we were good. That's why I said on the beginning of the rest, hi, I'm Archie Bill of Israel from Houston, Texas.
He was proud of being from Texas, but even more, he's proud of being from Houston, Texas, which he makes a real point of saying at the beginning of that song.
Take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like, take that for the DJ, but it's also kind of take that Dallas.
Sure will be tough. Now look here. Come on now. Now make it level.
Tighten Up was an accidental hit in almost every respect. First of all, Archie Bell and the Drells were hoping to score with a single called Dog Eat Dog. But before they had a chance to record a B-side, Bell got some bad news. It wasn't entirely unexpected. After all, the year was 1967. Archie Bell was 23 years old, and the U.S. was at war in Vietnam.
I had received a letter from Uncle Sam, one of those greetings, you know, going to the military, and I knew they was going to try to get me, and I was in like a down mood, kind of feeling down, and I was rooming with this guy named Billy Butler. And Billy Butler came in the house, and the radio was playing, and he was doing this little dance, and kind of cheered me up, made me forget about what I was thinking about, you know, the military. I said, "What's that you doing, man?" He said, "I'm doing the Tighten Up." So right then I got the idea. I said, "It'd be a good idea for a song." So I started working on it.
But before the record was released, Bell was shipped out overseas. The next year, he was in a military hospital recuperating from leg injuries when he got a phone call from his manager back home. Turns out an influential DJ had discovered the B-side to Dog Eat Dog, and so had the rest of America.
My manager, Skip Lee, called me. I was in a wheelchair, and he comes, "You know, Tighten Up just went gold." And I read up in the wheelchair and went down the hall, and I had been telling my buddies in the military, I said, they had little transistor radios. I said, "Man, that's my record they playing." And they would say, "Man, you guys from Texas tell big lies. Y'all not only do big things, but y'all can tell big lies." They didn't believe me. But when the article came out in Overseas Weekly, you know, the richest GI in the Army since Elvis, well, you know, everybody was all over me. You know, I kind of hated they found out, because I couldn't go anywhere without an entourage.
I mean, you can't go to a high school or college football game and not hear that song be played by the band at halftime or during the game. There's something about the way that Archie Bell just, you know, even if it was just this kind of throwaway thing on this dance, there's something about that that turned into something that just makes you feel good.
Eventually, Bell returned to the States and finished an album with his group.
Hi, everybody. This is Archie Bell, and these are the Drells. From Houston, Texas, and we are here to let you know that we ain't got no time to lose.
The Drells kept on performing until the early 80s, but never again came close to scoring another number one hit as they did back in 68. These days, Archie Bell's a solo artist. You might see him at Houston's Continental Club, or perhaps cruising around town in his ivory white Chrysler, the one with the plates that say Drells. Coming up, the story of an East Texas girl named Barbara, who found her boyfriend with another woman. It was the start of a breakup heard round the world.
I told him, I said, "You know what? If you lose me, you're going to lose a good thing, honey."
With Michael Hall of Texas Monthly Magazine, I'm David Brown of Texas Music Matters, and you're listening to The Flip Side. Stay with us.
Yeah, my man. All right.
I wanna tell you a story every man ought to know. If you want a little loving, you gotta start real slow. She's gonna love you tonight now, if you just treat her right now. Oh, squeeze her real gentle, gotta make her feel good. Tell her.
With music journalist Michael Hall of Texas Monthly Magazine, I'm David Brown of KUT's Texas Music Matters, and you're listening to The Flip Side, one-hit wonders from the Lone Star State. Before we move on, we should take a moment to talk a little bit about what we mean by one-hit wonders. You could get strict and literal about this. If a one-hit wonder is just an artist who hit the Billboard Top 40 only once, then a list of Texas one-hit wonders would have to include people like Janis Joplin. After all, barring any surprise re-releases, one can be pretty sure Janis won't be returning to the hit parade. And she hit it only once. On the other hand, there are plenty of other Texas musicians who've hit the top 40 only once and just might hit it again. When he was writing his article on one-hit wonders for the March 2007 issue of Texas Monthly, Michael Hall had to take all this stuff into account.
There were a bunch of lists of Texans who'd had hits, and we were going by Billboard pop charts. We wanted this to be a mainstream hit. And from there, I realized that at a certain point we had to set rules. I mean, these rules were going to be, to a certain extent, arbitrary, but they had to be rules, and the artists had to follow them. For example,
ow! Who said I see walking in these woods?
Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. I mean, one of my favorite songs as a kid was Hey There, Little Red Riding Hood.
Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You sure are looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want.
And of course, he did Woolly Bully.
One, two, three, cuatro.
They were both number two hits. And so as much as we wanted to squeeze him in here, we couldn't. But then again, you know, we found, like with Archie Bell, I mean, Tighten Up was a number one hit, a huge hit. He also had a song called Hey, We're Headed for a Showdown or Showdown, which was like in the top, somewhere in the teens or something, and he had some other hits. So we decided at a certain point, you had to have had that one hit, but you couldn't have more than one in the top five. Which was, again, kind of arbitrary, but we had to draw the line somewhere. All the people that we wound up with, every single one of them scored more songs on the charts, but they did have that one super hit. The other major qualification we had to make is the active artists who you might consider younger artists who are still out there trying to score a hit. There are people like the husband and wife and Timbuktu 3, Pat McDonald and Barbara Kay. Each of them still makes music. Fabulous Thunderbirds. Those members still make music. Edie Brickell, who we put on the cover of Texas Monthly back in the mid-80s. She and her band just released another record. Fastball. We had to draw certain lines on people who might have another hit and probably would not have returned the phone call anyway.
Giving them the benefit of the doubt.
Yes, yeah. Basically.
So them's the rules, now back to the game. Mike, this next one is sort of typical for these one-hit wonders. I already knew the song we're going to hear, but didn't really know the performer.
You know, I don't think people would know Barbara Lynn. And, you know, she was really pretty, she was really talented, but she didn't cross over into some kind of a cult of personality or anything built up around her, you know, not like Archie Bell or Roy Head certainly did, which in some ways makes her even more interesting to me.
Back in the late 50s, before Barbara Lynn Ozen had even graduated from high school in Beaumont, Texas, she had a very serious beau, and he was about to be in serious trouble.
I told him, I saw him talking with this young lady, you know, and he said, well, that's just my friend's sister, you know. I said, okay. Then the second time I saw him talking again, I said, oh, no, there's something going on here. And so he kept telling me the same thing. So one time I caught him, you know, actually having lunch together in a restaurant. And I said, Sylvester, this is it. So I just turned around and walked away and left. And so he said, no, Barbara, wait a minute. He was trying to explain and all that, and I just wouldn't hear it. So he called on the phone that night, and I told him, I said, you know what? If you lose me, you're going to lose a good thing, honey, because I know I've been a good woman to you, you know. Hey, I was in tears after that, but the next morning I got up and I wrote me a song. I wrote some lyrics.
If you should lose me, oh yeah, you lose a good thing. If you should lose me, oh yeah, you lose a good thing. You know I love you.
Barbara Lynn Ozen was not just a prolific young songwriter, she was also a pretty impressive left-handed guitar player. By 1962, she'd caught the eye of the legendary producer known as the Crazy Cajun, Huey P. Moe. Moe got her into the studio and started promoting his new singer, whose name he'd shortened to Barbara Lynn.
Oh my God, I had just had my tonsil taken out. Oh, I forgot how many months after the thing was out, you know. And that's when Hugh and my manager came to me at my grandmother's house and said, Barbara, I think we got a hit record. I say, really? And I couldn't talk because the doctor already told me, don't talk and get too excited. And when he told me what number that record was on the charts and that we were going to Dick Clark's American Bandstand in Philadelphia, I say, oh, I grabbed my throat and I was so excited, but I forgot what the doctor had said, you know. So I had to calm myself down. And I was so enthused, boy. You just don't know the feeling.
Oh, yeah. And you know I love you, and I'll do anything for you.
Barbara Lynn hit number 8 in 1962. 2 years later, a new group called the Rolling Stones would cover one of Barbara's songs.
No matter how much she wants me, I'm not going nowhere. I'm gonna stick right here, baby. You know how much I care. So don't worry about me, baby, 'cause I'm right here at home. Oh, baby.
These days, Barbara Lynn lives in a modest home in Beaumont. Her life is full and busy with family. And yet, thanks to a high school rake named Sylvester, music's always been the centerpiece of her life. Again, Michael Hall of Texas Monthly.
What a strange life, you know. Here's Barbara Lynn, who I've actually followed her career over the years. She still puts out records. She's a grandmother. And yet she still has one of the coolest, most yearning R&B hits of all time, and yet she still, you call her up and she's down in Beaumont fussing after her grandchildren and picking up her daughter from the doctor, and that to me is fascinating. I don't think she flies, but she still tours. She still travels around and still does these shows. And if it hadn't been for that one hit, she probably wouldn't be doing it.
In 1962, they were just Jill Jackson and Ray Hildebrand, a couple of students at Howard Payne College in Brownwood, Texas, who had a cute little duo called Jill and Ray. In 1963, they had a number one record, and they weren't Jill and Ray anymore.
One of the reasons I think that people think that one-hit wonders aren't very talented is, you know, they have this one hit, and they think, oh, they're lucky. And this is one case where there was a lot of luck involved.
Jill Jackson and I had a radio show in Brownwood, Texas, and I had written this little song called Paul and Paula.
As Ray Hildebrand remembers it, after they did the song on the radio show, people kept calling and requesting it. So Jill's mother had an idea. Why not cut a record? Can't be that hard, can it?
Loris Jackson, Jill's mother, had called around and found out who did those kind of things, you know, who recorded things, and she found out that there was a producer in Fort Worth, Texas, named Major Bill Smith. We did not have an appointment. We did not have anything. We drove up there on a chance. And a guy did not show up. If you can believe that, a guy did not show up who was supposed to record. And we got to walk in there and record Hey Paula. And we signed contracts and we drove back that evening to Brownwood, Texas. The very next thing that happened, that Major Bill, he started shopping it around. And Mercury or Phillips Records looked at it, and they changed the name from Jill and Ray singing Paul and Paula to Hey Paula by Paul and Paula, which was better for the marketing. And then the first thing right out of the box, he calls and he says, you kids got any money? He said, you got any clothes? We're going to we got promotion tours and along the East Coast, so we took off, and boy, we didn't look up. We went from fan to famous in 4 months, and we were number one in America. And it was just, you can't believe the shock, the cultural shock or whatever, you know.
Hey, hey, Paula, I want to marry you. Hey, hey, Paula, no one else could ever do. I've waited so long for school to be through. Paula, I can't wait no more. For you, my love, my love.
Hey, Pa, I've been waiting for you. Hey, 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 Pa, I want to marry you too. If you love me true, if you love me still,
Hildebrand admits there's not much to this song. In fact, he concedes there are lots of better songs more deserving, but it's hard to argue with its staying power. In the past 44 years, not a day has gone by that Hey Paula wasn't played on the radio somewhere.
It just became this huge hit, and in some ways, the biggest hit here. Ray Hildebrand from Paul and Paula said, you ought to see my royalty check.
Ray Hildebrand is still doing music.
Ray is a Christian recording artist. He lives up in Oklahoma and has been putting out records and still does stuff in the Christian field. And Jill is a grandmother living in the San Fernando Valley.
The clicks and pops tell you this ain't no CD. For a generation of toddlers who happen to have had older siblings listening to early FM rock radio, this song was not just memorable. It was downright traumatic, pretty much in the same category as watching The Blob on TV, seeing paintings of clowns, that sort of thing.
I got married 7 years ago. I didn't know the song. My wife was kidding me about it, and she got me the CD. And I had missed it. You know, everybody has blind spots in their pop music history. I missed this song. I had never heard it. She remembers it really vividly. And was it 1971?
Uh-huh, that's right.
I've got another friend of mine. It was his first 8-track. He remembers it so vividly. He was in junior high, and he remembers it. People who remember this song remember it and played it over and over and over again. This would be the one song that I think will surprise people.
Laying here, looking at the ceiling, someone lays a sheet across my chest. Something warm is flowing down my fingers. Pain is flowing all through my back.
It it's just so weird. I mean, this was a year when FM DJs were just playing whatever they wanted to. This is 8.5 minute long song about a plane crash. And it just goes on and on with these really weird, the organ is doing this like siren sound and this ponderous bass and these choruses and these words that are just, it's really melodramatic. And it just goes on and on and on, and then finally the guy dies, and it's just horrible. But I mean, it was the kind of thing that if you were a 14-year-old boy or a 24-year-old boy and liked to smoke a lot of pot or whatever, it was huge.
Such a distant stare.
In case you don't remember, the song's called DOA by a band from Fort Worth, Texas called Blood Rock. The six-piece hard rock outfit was discovered by Terry Knight. Knight was pretty busy at the time with another group called Grand Funk Railroad. Before Grand Funk started spinning out top 40 records in the mid-70s, they were known for their long jams that hit radio wouldn't touch. Blood Rock seemed to be cut from the same cloth, but for some reason, Blood Rock was moving rapidly and unexpectedly into hit parade territory. Keyboard player Stevie Hill.
Terry Knight, or the producer, he wasn't that wild at first about releasing the song as a single. However, you can tell this was a different time because the DJs picked up, just independently picked it up and started playing it. But one of the hang-ups about it was all the DJs were doing their own edits. And so just you'd drive around the country in your car and it'd be 4 minutes in one town and a minute and a half in the other. And so Terry went back and did an edit of as a single. A lot of people were interested in that song and wanted to play that song. And so all of a sudden, we did have a single of it, and it started getting played even more.
DOA reached number 36 on the Billboard Top 40 in 1971. Blood Rock would go on to record several more albums, but they never had a follow-up hit.
I mean, you kind of live and die by those hit singles, but it's a little bit like lightning in a bottle. If you came to Jimi Hendrix and said, let's write Are You Still Experienced? Because we're going to have two hits.
Though Blood Rock broke up in 1974, the members recently reunited for a sold-out concert in Fort Worth to help raise funds for Hill, who's fighting leukemia. They're hoping to release a DVD and a CD of that event, too. The members of Blood Rock are proud of what they accomplished, and rightly so, says music journalist Michael Hall. After all, there's nothing else like it.
If you're making pop music, you want to make something for the ages. You want to make something original. You can sit there and make fun of this song, which it's very easy to do, and I've certainly done it. It's kind of like Spinal Tap in some ways. And yet, these guys created something that's going to last for a long, long time.
Coming up, the Texas one-hit wonder that arguably changed the history of rock and roll. With Michael Hall of Texas Monthly Magazine, I'm David Brown of Texas Music Matters, and you're listening to The Flip Side. Stay with us. With music journalist Michael Hall of Texas Monthly Magazine, I'm David Brown of Texas Music Matters, and you're listening to The Flip Side, one-hit wonders from the Lone Star State. It was a time when tail fins on cars were falling out of fashion.
a guy named John Kennedy was in the White House. And down in San Antonio, Texas, Ildefonso Fraga Ozuna was just a high school kid who didn't really like doing homework. But he loved that rock and roll music.
You can imagine I was just a typical teenager running from school as fast as we could to get home to see the American Bandstand on TV. Came on every afternoon. School was over at 3:30. I think it came on at 4, 4:30. It was the thing. It was like your MTV today. It was that hot. So to think that one day I'm going to actually wake up and Dick Clark called and won us on his program to come do the show. And it was exciting, man. God, it was exciting, exciting, exciting.
Ozuna formed his first garage band in the late 50s. The teenagers would load up a station wagon and zip back and forth between Houston and San Antonio, working gigs for $100 a night. Those were the days when you were something and the somebodies, like Archie Bell and the Drells, Buddy Holly and the Crickets. When the kids noticed a sign for the Sunglow Feed Company, it was an omen. Sonny and the Sunliners was born. On weekday afternoons, when Sonny wasn't watching Bandstand, he'd be hanging out at the Palm Heights Recreation Center.
At Palm Heights, every afternoon, there was this one older guy, and he would come and he would bang on the piano there in the corner of the Recreation Center. And I used to I'd be drawn to that instead of the baseball and the basketball and the football. I'd be drawn over there. And this guy would sit there and sounded like Johnny Mathis, man, playing on the piano. A very natural talent that, I mean, just came out of the guy. And then, so I was fascinated. He would always bang this one song called Talk to Me. And I kept saying, well, I like that. Well, it stayed with me all those years. Bring you back up to the time where we're going to get ready to record our first record. That was the one I wanted to record. Stayed with me all those years.
Talk to me. Talk to me.
Isn't it amazing how the guy had the song in his hands? He was a lot more talented. I wasn't even getting anywhere close to thinking that I wanted to do this for the rest of my life. But the point is that he had it in his hand. When I got around to record it, it became the number one song in the country for 17 weeks. And the guy had it in his hands all those years. Is that amazing?
The success of Talk to Me gave Sonny and the Sunliners a lot of opportunities. They started recording 50s-sounding songs with Spanish lyrics. And, of course, there was that invitation from Dick Clark.
They were apparently the first Mexican-American band on Bandstand, and he credits that song with being the beginning of Tejano music. You know, basically taking these chord changes, because that's just, you know, your old 50s chord changes, and singing En Español, singing songs about being a Mexican-American.
Though Tejano music is going through something of a slump right now, Sonny stayed flexible over the years, recording country music, a little bit of gospel, rock and roll standards. But, you know, he keeps getting requests for that same old song.
Let's go back in time when things were simple. High school, drive-ins, the sock hops. The girl next door, ah, she was nice. Let's reminisce. Talk to me, talk to me.
I just come back with doing this show just 2 days ago at the LA Forum in Los Angeles, doing these shows with these incredible artists, you know, that are still from back in the day. The guy flies me up there, first class, a round trip, first class, embassy suite, the whole thing, limousine service to and from the venue. They have a spread of food when we get to the venue to do a sound check, just like the big rock and rollers and all that. It's incredible. But I'm there to do three songs, and I'm done. I turn around, get on the plane, and come home. It's amazing. But it was all because of Talk to Me.
I love you so.
By the mid-70s, band names had moved on. No more something in the somethings. Instead, you needed a name that sounded like a person. There was no Jethro Tull in Jethro Tull, no Lynyrd Skynyrd in Lynyrd Skynyrd. And in South Texas, there was no Toby Bo in Toby Bo. It was just the name of a shrimp boat that happened to be parked down at Port Isabel. Again, music journalist Michael Hall.
It was a band called Toby Bo. It was a group of kids from down in the valley, a mixed band of Anglo kids and Mexican-American kids. They were big fans of Sonny Azuna and Talk to Me. You know, you listen to a lot of these songs and they have a similar feel and similar chord changes. And My Angel Baby just kind of came out of them. And I think it came out of them because that's what they grew up listening to.
So Toby Bo played a kind of softer-edged music, a laid-back, take-it-easy rock sound that was growing in popularity nationally. You get the idea. Baldemar Silva was the lead singer for Toby Bo.
The popularity of that style of music, folk rock, country rock, the Eagles came on, so we were getting booked all over. We actually ran out of places to play in South Texas, so we moved the band to San Antonio, Texas.
Not expecting what would happen next. See, the music industry was eager to find the next Eagles. The management company behind the rock group Kiss had been tipped off about a little act playing bars in San Antonio.
So they sent down this fella named Sean Delaney, who used to work for Kiss. He came down and we did like a weekend in a small studio in San Antonio, and we brushed up on our writing, and then he just took off. He didn't really say, I think I'm going to keep you guys or whatever, but so we thought, well, we got a weekend out of it. They called back a week later and they said, look, break your leases on your apartments, sell your cars. We need the band in New York before the month's over.
For the guys in Toby Bo, it would become like a rock and roll boot camp. They were put up in a nice hotel. They were taught how to handle themselves in public, how to deal with the press, how to put on a stage show. But the company didn't touch the music. That would be left to Toby Bo. Silva remembers one night in a hotel room with guitarist Danny McKenna.
Danny was an excellent musician. We grew up together back in the early 70s playing music. And we remember the groups like a lot of the rhythm and blues groups, especially in Texas. One of the big heroes was Sonny and the Sunliners. So Danny was writing this hook. He was singing the chorus, My Angel Babe, playing these beautiful chords. I grabbed a pencil and a piece of paper, and in 15 or 20 minutes, that song was done. And it just came out. It was a simple pop top 40 song that we didn't intend to record because it didn't sound anything like the rest of the record.
We've got trouble, something's just not right. Just this morning, you cried about last night. You said that something's bound to break this time. What's breaking is my heart. I can read between the lines. It's tearing me apart. You've got leaving on your mind, but your mind, angel baby. Yes, you're my angel, baby. Oh, you're my angel, baby. For the rest of the night.
We thought maybe that we could maybe sell the song to Gladys Knight or Donna Summer or, you know, one of those kind of acts. But Sean Delaney, our producer, heard My Angel Baby and he goes, that's the one, that's the song.
Loving was easier when you were loving me. I guess you found someone and now I find what's breaking is my heart. You've got leaving on your mind, but you're my angel, baby. Yes, you're mine.
it's one of the songs responsible for punk rock. I mean, this is the kind of music that, this kind of easy listening rock music that you heard on the radio that made kids pick up the guitars and turn them up to 10.
And perhaps Texas Monthly's Michael Hall has met a few of those kids over the years. You know who you are. But say what you will about the polished sound that would become adult contemporary, it owes a lot to people like Sonny Azuna, only a generation or two earlier. And as for Baldemar Silva, well, because of My Angel Baby, he says, I never had to pick up a broom or a shovel or a hammer. Again, Michael Hall.
It's an easy listening hit, and yet they were trying to do this country rock thing, and they eventually fell apart just because they couldn't follow it up with anything approaching it, and the band fell apart. But he took, Balde took the name, the stage name, Toby Beau, and he's continued. He and his wife play down on Padre Island.
My name is Bruce Chanel. I live in Nashville, Tennessee, and originally from Grapevine, Texas. And since I was a little kid, I had that dream to want to do music. I didn't know how I was going to do it or how it was going to come about, but most every waking moment was geared toward that, you know, trying to write a song, playing a gig somewhere, putting a band together, traveling. You just spend your life doing that, you know. And I think the good Lord just got tired of seeing me struggle and decided we better give this guy something before he goes nuts, you know.
In the early 1960s, Bruce Chanel was living in North Texas doing just about anything he could to make a living in the music business. While singing in the Light Crust Doughboys, that's the band that helped launch the career of one Bob Wills, Chanel would occasionally write songs and go into a studio to record them. Around 1961, he hooked up with a veteran songwriter, and together they'd write The One.
He was doing some co-writing with a woman named Margaret Cobb.
Music journalist Michael Hall of Texas Monthly.
And he went in to do, I think it was a demo, but it might have been an actual, just a studio session with a backing band. And it turned out in the backing band was the harmonica player named Delbert McClinton. And they did three takes of this song. And by the third one, you know, McClinton had come up with this really cool harmonica riff.
They said, well, let's try it one more time. So we did it again. And Marvin Montgomery, who was co-producer with Bill Smith on the record, on the third take, said, wait a minute, it needs a piano. So he came in the studio with Delbert and the band and I and played the piano. And the third take is the one that you hear now. We were trying to get it played by all these people, and we'd go visit the stations and ask them to add it to their playlist. And we got to Houston. That would have been, sometime after Christmas, after New Year's, seemed to me like something like that. We had taken a trip, Major Bill Smith and I went in his little Carver car, and he always had the back full of records that he was promoting and that kind of thing. So we got to Houston, and in the Rice Hotel where we were staying, we pulled up front and had the radio station tuned in, and they announced, they said, and now here's our new number one record, in Houston, Texas, Bruce Chanel and Hey Baby. And I was so excited, I bounced up and hit my head on the top of that little Carvery inside. And we were both just over the moon. We couldn't believe it. It was number one on the bigger stations. So it wasn't long until Mercury Records leased it and put it out on their Smash label and took it to number one in most countries. So we're grateful for that.
That's the way I want to say. Come on, baby, give me your world. I want to know if you'll be my girl.
So it's 1962. Bruce Chanel has a number one record in the U.S., and he goes to England to promote it, taking harmonica player Delbert McClinton on tour with him. They had an opening act, and neither Bruce nor Delbert had ever heard of him.
We were there in the summer of 62. I think it was from June to July. And the Beatles weren't recording yet. I guess they had done some recordings, but they didn't actually get in the studio and do any of their own stuff until 1964. So this was a couple of years before that. And John had asked Delbert to play some for him in the dressing room. And Delbert played for him, and he said he really liked that sound and wanted to use it sometime.
It's like Lennon copied him, and it's this, he copied the sound, the feel. Of course, Lennon was a great musician and all, but he learned so much from Delbert McClinton, and he took so much from what Delbert showed him right then, which means that you can draw this amazing line from this little Fort Worth studio to the beginning of the modern rock and roll era right then.
Love me do.
These days, Bruce Chanel writes songs for a living. Not that he has to. Hey Baby has been covered more than 200 times, and it's been a hit in every decade since that first recording in 61, most recently going quadruple platinum as a soccer anthem in Europe.
Thank you, folks, for liking Hey Baby, and it's been really great to me. And I never thought a person could have a career from one song, but it just won't let it be.
The Flip Side is a production of KUT's Texas Music Matters in conjunction with Texas Monthly Magazine, Usra Sayed and Andy Euler, producers.
Texas Music Matters is made possible in part by Lewis Shanks of Texas, offering fine home furnishings since 1945. LewisShanksFurniture.com.
Michael Hall's feature, The Songs Remain the Same, appears in the March 2007 issue of Texas Monthly Magazine. On behalf of the entire Texas Music Matters team, I'm David Brown, wishing you all the very best from Austin, Texas.